Welcome to the Performance Baseball Podcast, talking about youth baseball coaching and player development. Our goal is to equip coaches and parents to win on and off the field.
We are your hosts, Adam Young
and Josh Riley.
Like, subscribe, and comment, and if you ask a question in the comments, we'll do our best to answer it.
Now, let's go to the show. Hey guys, welcome back to the Performance Baseball Podcast, where we're talking all things coaching. All right, today, first off, hey Adam, how you doing?
I'm good. I've been really busy over the last couple weeks. Apologies to our faithful listeners. We haven't turned out a couple of episodes in a couple of weeks, so we're getting back on the saddle, so to speak.
Yeah.
Here today, and so we kind of have some catching up to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So since we last talked, the Thunder were still in the, were they in the second round at that point, or were they still in the first round?
Yeah, I think first or second round. I mean, it's been a couple of weeks. I mean, small hiatus is a busy time of year.
It really is. It's just wild how May does that to me every year. I'm always blown away by how May just gets away from me. It's a crazy month.
Yeah. Well, first off, like being a full-time, you know, like you're a full-time pastor, so you have a full-time job. You also have multiple kids.
Yep.
You're running your family, and you're a grad student. You know, like you're working on all that. So, I mean, yeah, I get it. I mean, coaching takes a lot. You know, I run a small business. I have a toddler and a baby. It's just like, gosh, time flies.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to, like, you know, just keep track of everything.
Yeah, it really is. I am not what you would call a bastion of balance right now. I am going to have to, in fact, going forward, like, into the fall, I'm going to have to kind of shuffle some things and figure out how to get achieve a little bit of better balance between family and school and baseball and all of that. So I'm stepping back a little bit on my doctoral work and just taking a lighter class load in the fall. And so I'm going to slow that process down a little bit, because especially the last 2 weeks is like finishing up my final papers and projects and stuff like that for my classes just kicked my butt. I mean, I didn't get much sleep, and trying to then stay on top of all things family and church was tough, and baseball then was just another layer.
And you know what? Like right now we're recording this the Friday of Memorial Weekend, so I mean we're already in summer mode. Like the last when Edmund got out 2 days ago, or yesterday was their last day of school.
Yep.
So I mean, first day of real summer break for Edmund schools.
That's right.
And so
my family, you know, we don't know how to relax. We decided, hey, last day of school, end of school, we're gonna go celebrate and take a 5-hour trip to Kansas City and go to Great Wolf Lodge.
Oh, there you go.
So we ran up to Great Wolf Lodge Wednesday, got back yesterday.
Nice.
And I was at practice last night.
Nice. Good for you. Good for you, man.
Well, it was fun though. It was a fun little quick getaway. And nothing like the Greater American Road Trip to just kind of put you into this.
Go relax for a night.
Yeah.
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 I mean, as crazy of a quick trip that is, it's probably not much relaxation, though. No, yeah, you probably unplug. That's the relaxation, is unplugging.
Yep.
But, I mean, you're still running around a water park.
Yeah, I turned my phone off and just didn't have it at all.
Nice.
While we were hanging out. And
well, that's why I didn't get a text back. No, I'm kidding. I'm
kidding. Turned it back on, and, of course, I've got 100-something text messages and, you know, a bunch of emails to look at. Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was crazy.
Yeah, this is my first time actually experiencing, because I have a 3-year-old and 1-year-old. My 3-year-old goes Mother's Day out. This is kind of the first time of like where I had him go to school, and now he's off for summer break, and it's like, oh my gosh, I have two kids at home.
what in the world
I mean, our neighborhood pool opens up this weekend, so at least there's that. If the rain stays away, we'll probably make it over there for a little bit, but like, man, I don't know how parents, you know, my parents, I don't know how they did it, keeping up with everyone, but it'll be good stuff.
We definitely took the hodgepodge approach with all of our boys growing up. It was like, how many camps can we sign him up for and not break the budget? And that, and how many weeks can we just send them to grandparents and
yeah,
and get their help or sisters or whatever?
Just, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because, I mean, my wife and I both work full-time jobs and
yeah,
and trying to have everybody at home all at the same time just – like that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Or work well.
Well, there's so many families that are like that, that just makes, they make sure that the kids stay active, that they're doing things. I mean, we were already getting asked for RSP for our gym. We were already getting asked our summer hours like 2 months ago. People are already planning out their summer. Yep. They want to know what our class schedule was, when yep, our baseball camp is. So, I mean, it's crazy that you now plan out your entire summer. You know, you have everything down to a T for the most part.
Yeah. Tell us about the baseball camp a little bit. It's at the end of July, right?
Yeah, the end of July. We're right down the road, down Hefner Highway, down at PCAA Fields. So it's a four-day camp. We'll run Monday through Thursday from 8:30 to 12:30. We usually have like a ratio of four campers to one coach. So we have a lot of coaches out there. We break it up to different age groups. So we usually have like a you know, like 8 to 10-year-olds, 11 to 12-year-olds, and a lot of our older kids, usually 13 and 14-year-olds together. That's kind of the age range. Work on anywhere from fielding to fly balls to base running. We have lots of fun. We usually wrap up camp with the home run derby for our older kids, and then a skills test for the younger kids, like fun. Who could throw the ball the furthest,
yeah,
who could get around the bases the fastest. It's fun. We try to make it as instructional as possible, but also like throw in a lot of competitions. But it's a blast. Yeah. It's hot summer days, you know, yeah, end of July.
No
it's,
kidding.
But we're early morning, so we're out there usually before the heat hits, or at least the heat will be there for the last couple hours. But
yeah,
it's good stuff.
You doing any slip and slides or anything like that?
We haven't done any slip and slides. The field we used to be on didn't have any water supply. Oh, so
that makes sense.
Yeah, but I do know slip and slides are usually the go-to, especially right, on sliding days, you know?
Oh, yeah. Teach yeah, them how to slide.
Homer good, Derby kids get into it, though.
Oh, I bet.
We usually take them over to the T-ball, usually the T-ball field. So, like, there's lots of hit home runs, but
that's awesome.
So at least it gives the opportunity for everyone to hit it. You're not that's fun, on a big boy field.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you pulling all your coaches from? Who all is helping you coach?
Usually all the coaches are RSP instructors. So all of our full-time coaches. So if you're familiar with our coaching staff, it's usually myself. We'll have Dean out there. Tanner's usually out there. A couple others, you know, Kanai or even Trayvon will be out there, but, yeah,
awesome,
good stuff. Yeah.
Cool. And how do kids sign up, or how do parents sign up?
Yeah,
kids?
Head over to our website, RileySportsPerformance.com. There should be a drop down for summer camp. Click on that, and you'll find all the details, all the dates, the registration, and then get them all signed up.
Jumpstart your fall season.
Yep, registration's live, so go ahead and make sure you get on there so you make sure you get a camp shirt.
All right. So, Josh, what are we talking about today?
All right, today we're going to be talking through all like coaching instincts. We're going to be covering how to coach confidence, helping players handle pressure, kind of when to coach, when to step in, but also when to let the game kind of be the best coach, and then also like baseball IQ stuff, man. So, like, starting off with like confidence. I mean, confidence is a huge thing, just with all athletes. How do you, I know you're in the younger age groups, 8U and 10U. Right. How do you help with confidence? I know it's something that you kind of have to learn, but how do you push them in the right direction?
You know, it's something that I've seen with my older son's teams. You can tell when a team is playing with confidence and when they aren't. And I feel like confidence is one of the highest determining factors for success at the plate or success on the mound. And certainly confidence is something that you have to work on building up internally through practice. I think that's where it's built. Now we have a mantra on my team that is, you know, believe, trust, and win. Which stands for I believe in myself, I trust my teammates, or my teammates trust me, I will win the next pitch. And I reiterate that to them a lot. And as a coach, there are times when they need their confidence to be from an external source rather than from an internal source. So they need me to say to them, look, I believe in you in this situation. We all trust you. Just go win the next pitch. Don't worry about how many runners are on base. Don't worry about what the score is. Don't worry about your girlfriend in the stands. You know, just go compete and win each pitch. And, you know, we've got some kids who are great athletes and really good baseball players. And there are times when they are throwing strikes and you can just see and feel the confidence exuding from them. And then other times those same kids start to miss the strike zone and then they lose that. They lose that mental edge. And there are times when I can go up and tell them, you know, hey, what's our mantra? You know, I believe in myself. Say that to me. Say that with me. Yeah. And I can tell that it's like, coach, you're BSing me right now. I don't actually believe this.
Yeah.
But I do think positive self-talk makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Positive self-talk is a huge thing. And like, one thing like with confidence is making sure that they're able to reset, make sure that they're able to believe in themselves and go from there. There's one thing that I've heard it from someone else, that they stopped asking like, hey, how did your weekend go? Like, what are the things we need to work on? I started asking like, hey, what'd you do well? You know, like I think the biggest thing is making sure that they understand like that we shouldn't really focus on the negative. Yeah. It's the opportunity to see what we need to work on, but I want to hear like what gets them excited. What do they do really well? And then like really building upon that. Cause I do think that confidence comes from like, especially in the younger age groups, is understanding like, hey, I have what it takes, but also being reminded of what I do well, to understand what their strengths are.
Yep.
Understand what, hey, like, man, you killed it. You know, like, oh, I may have gone 2 for 5. I may have struck out 3 times. What were those 2 hits? Were they doubles? Oh, fantastic. You smoked the ball.
Right.
Awesome. I love adding in like talking about their strengths, because when you get a kid talking about their strengths, man, I do think it helps promote that confidence.
Yeah.
But like you said, that big word believe, like they have to believe in themselves.
Yeah. We've started something with my 10U team, and I haven't done it with my 8U team yet, but I think I will next season. And that is, and it takes a little bit of time, but we do attaboys after every game. And so either I'll pick someone to go first or somebody will volunteer to go first. And their job is to pick somebody else on the team.
I like
and
that.
Tell them something that they did good like during that. The game.
I like that.
And you give them just a little attaboy. And then that person who got picked picks the next
it's
person.
It's kind of like a popcorn. Yeah, right.
And you just go around until everybody's been given an attaboy.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You know, sometimes a kid's not going to have a good game. And maybe the end of their game, they made a bad play, and like that's all they're thinking about. But they forgot about, like you said, that double down the line, or that triple down the line, or that RBI that they got that put us ahead, or you know, putting a bunt down even though they got thrown out, or whatever it is. It's always those little things, and we want to focus on the positive for sure.
Yeah.
with our kids, and. I like what you said about highlighting their strengths. There's a little book and like a professional development thing called Strengths Finder. I don't know if you've heard about it or not, but it's the same idea. Basically, like instead of trying to focus on our weaknesses and shoring up our weaknesses, which really just makes us a little less mediocre in those areas. We focus on our strengths and build on our strengths to highlight the things that we're really good at, to and put all of our time and energy into what makes us unique and gifted.
Yeah.
And just recognize that, you know, our weaknesses are our weaknesses. But it's that same kind of idea.
Yeah, I do think weaknesses definitely need to be addressed. You know, like if you're not a good bunter, obviously you should still work on bunting. But I think talking about strengths as a player is huge, because like, let's just be real, like that's what people are going to know you for.
Right.
Like if you're a hard fastball pitcher, like, yeah, you want to throw a changeup. Yeah, you need to mix up speeds. But like, just master your, like, locate your fastball, man. Mm-hmm. If you're a home run hitter, like, early in the count, drop a bomb. You know, like, focus on those, focus on those strengths. Because, like, that's what you're known for. If, like, and then, I mean, let's just turn it to life, you know. If you're a good public speaker, you should probably go talk with people. You know, go talk, you know. If you're a good mathematician or good whatever, like, go be an accountant. You know, like, you don't need to work on your weaknesses. Like, hone in on your strengths and just get really good at it.
And
you
that's why we're on a team. Because everybody's going to have a different mix of strengths and weaknesses, and hopefully somebody else on the team can shore up what maybe you're not as good at. You know, yes, I want all of my kids to be able to bunt. I want all of my kids to be able to hit to the gaps. But I know, like, there's a couple of kids on my team that they're my power hitters. I'm probably not asking them to bunt more often than not. Yeah. I want them hitting the ball, right? And so, like, yes, I have the skill, develop the skill, but know that you're a power hitter and lean into that, you know, and work on that.
Absolutely. I do think that you could definitely – so – now talking about like how to coach confidence, I do think that there's a time and place for like in practice that you could definitely hone in on that. I love like having a section, like especially like on a hitting, just giving them small wins, you know, like whether it's like, hey, let's have a competition of line drives off the tee to the back net, give them the opportunity to win that. And I do think that that also helps out with confidence. I do think that there's a practice side of things to where they can actually feel confident, work through it, whether it's, again, hitting line drives or, you know, line drive competition, or if it's like a curveball day, working curveballs, like hang curveballs until they hammer it and just like try to hit that same spot over and over so they can just feel comfortable with their swing.
Yeah. One of the things that I was thinking about as you were talking was that. Well, now I've lost my train of thought.
You're good.
One of the notes that you've written down here of separating your self-worth from your performance, I think that's a really important note.
Yeah.
That our self-worth is not determined by the outcome. Oh, this is what I was going to say.
Get it well, sir.
One of the things we track on my team, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast, is how hard a player is making contact. So every game we are tracking the swings and the contact that they are making with that and assigning it a point value. So like if a kid hits a really hard line drive but it happens to go right at the shortstop and it's an out, like they're not getting penalized for that. They're getting rewarded for that, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If they're making really solid hard contact, you know, I want to give them credit for that. And so that way we're kind of separating the process from the outcome. Like we want to focus more on the process of becoming a really good hitter. And that means making hard contact, you know, line drives.
Do you have expectation for numbers on that? Or do you just track and give them feedback?
We just track it, and it's part of how I set my lineup, but we call it productivity ratings. I toyed with last season actually posting those results, and I haven't done it at all this season. But I know there have been a couple times where I've overheard a conversation in the dugout of like, hey, why is so-and-so hitting there and not up here? And I'm like, well, the numbers show
numbers,
this.
Numbers don't lie.
Right. Yeah. And so even though maybe they're a smaller player, they're more consistent.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's part of it too. But yeah, I haven't taken that other step of posting people's like point totals. But I know other coaches that do, and they just basically post the point totals for the season.
Gotcha.
And you can see where you rank.
Wow.
As the season goes on, and like, and they post like what you get points for.
Yeah.
And basically, if you want to move up the points list, you make harder and better contact.
Nice.
And more often.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. My team, we take it one step further and like, and I coach the older kids, but we turn it into quality at bats. So like, instead of hard contact is a check mark. But like, did you have hard contact? Did you have base hit? Did you get hit by pitch or walk? There's like six or seven things that contribute to it. Do you have a, 7+ pitch at bat? Walks hit by pitches.
Were you fouling off pitches?
Yeah. Did you go deep in the count? So like getting them rewarded on all that.
Obviously a hit's a quality at bat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A base hit, a walk, hit by pitch, hard hit ball. All that stuff. Send the expectation. But yeah, I think it's a great thing, great tool. Just like to track kind of.
Do you post a sign in the dugout that shows what all you can do to get a quality at bat?
Yep. We have a checklist that I hang right next to our lineup. Just a paper sheet that inning by inning, you'll have the lineup on it. And then during the inning, they'll just check mark, was it a quality at bat?
Oh,
so
nice.
if they got a hit, awesome. There's a check mark next to their name. If they don't do anything, if they just strike out, then no, there's no check mark.
Oh, okay.
So our team goal is to get 11+. So actually overall we've done fantastic job. And this was kind of like a team brainstorm where we actually put together a punishment if we don't hit the quality of bat number. So it's either laps around the building here at RSP or pulls at the practice field.
Nice.
So for every missed one, so like this our last game last weekend we had 8. So we had to do 3 laps around the building.
Oh, okay.
So gotcha. Yeah. So just kind of the way that I can hold them accountable
and
for all that.
And do you feel like, on the whole, your quality at bats have gone up? Your run production's gone up?
I haven't tracked run production, but, like, I do feel like it's given us an opportunity to have more quality at bats.
Because
it's not just us going up there just to hit or just to be at bat. It's us having the opportunity to be like, hey, we're working together for a team goal.
Yeah.
Just a fun way to track
that's great.
It.
Yeah. And then again, you're not necessarily focused on the outcome of that individual at bat.
Yeah, because you can still get out and have a quality at bat. No big deal.
Exactly. You're looking for the process.
It's kind of like hard hit ball. You know, if it's a hard hit ball, fantastic. You did your job.
I think baseball is one of those sports that you have to be process oriented. You have to take the long view, right? And again, separating self-worth from performance is something that all of us, even as adults, I think have to struggle with at times, especially in America, in our very success-driven society, we definitely tie self-worth to what you produce. And sometimes literally do that with how much you're paid based on how much you produce.
Yeah.
And it's truth. It can definitely tie one's sense of identity to being that cog in the wheel or being a producer.
Yeah.
There is so much more to our identities than what we produce for the economy.
Yes. So, I mean, separating that, like, I feel like younger kids don't quite like they. I feel like they do understand. So if you talk to them about that, their self-worth is more than just a performance. I do know that they understand it, but I don't know if they're actually understanding it yet. I don't know if they're to that age yet. But like young teenagers, man, like they're at that prepubescent kind of age where it's like they start getting it, and I do feel, and I love coaching for that matter. It's like you can really make a positive impact on these kids. Parents too, like understand that like self-worth is, oh man, it goes way beyond performance. Like it goes towards life. Make sure that they understand the like effort, their attitude, make sure that they're a good teammate, cleaning up after themselves. Like all that stuff goes way beyond their performance. I don't care if you're batting 500 or 600.
And
like, are you just a good human being?
Yeah.
You know, like.
And if you really want to turn the screws on this one, recognizing that our self-worth as parents is not tied to our players' performance.
Amen.
That could be a tough one.
Yeah.
That could be a tough one for us to learn.
And like right before we were recording, we were just talking about, you know, just dynamics, you know, just team dynamics. And I do feel like there's a lot like there's a lot out there. Like, we just being a tournament ball, we come across a lot of families where, you know, you definitely come across some people like
it's
that.
It's hard to let your kid fail. It's hard to let your kid play a smaller role on a team when you think they should have a bigger role. I've been through it myself.
Just let them be.
Yeah.
I guess, like, I mean, just talking about, like, letting them be, as a coach, there's some opportunities, like, for confidence. Like, there's definitely situations in a game where there's times where, I mean, you've probably been there, where you want to jump off your seat. You want to yell at the team for, like, you know, if they ever make a bonehead
issue. Especially
my younger
team, for sure.
Yeah, so, like, I'm just kind of, like, using that little, like, rabbit hole talking about, like, sometimes it's okay to let the kids, like, fail. We already talked about that. But from a coach standpoint, like, I feel like baseball can definitely teach kids a whole lot if you just sit back and let them play.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, like, you know, there's a couple times where, like, if my shortstop's not in the right spot for a cutoff guy, you know, as a cutoff man, like, he knows, like, I shouldn't have to yell at them. You know, let them learn the game, let them understand what's going on, and let the game teach them what needs to happen sometimes.
I struggle with this as much as, you know, as anybody. With my 8U boys, those games for me are so much more exhausting than my older kids who have been around the sport longer and know the drill a little bit more and know what they should and shouldn't be doing. With my 8U kids, you know, they are still learning what their job is at every position on every play. Like, the right fielder backing up throws to first base, or the center fielder backing up a throw on an overthrow from first base to second base. You know, all of those little things of backing up of it's not just about catching fly balls or fielding grounders. There are there's a job for you to do on literally every play.
Every player has a job. Yeah. Yes.
And helping those kids learn that, it's hard not to remind them of those things during the game.
Yes.
Normally, and with my 10U boys, I am definitely taking a little bit more of a backseat approach of, like, we're going to let the play out. We're not trying to shout where to throw the ball. We're letting them figure that out. We're making sure that they call out the play before the play happens.
Yeah.
And with my 8U boys, too, I'm doing that, too. They've got to call out the play before it happens.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the one calling it out because I want them thinking about where they're going with the ball. And so part of it is making sure that they're developing the habits of thinking about where they're going with the ball before the play happens.
Yes.
But again, with my younger ones, there are definitely times where we notice, okay, so-and-so missed doing this job on that particular situation, and we're going to address it, you know, and say, hey, don't forget. You've got to get over here. Yeah. You've got to go over there.
Yeah.
You know, those kinds of things. And we'll do that in games. As they get older, that will decrease.
I do think there's a fine line between, like, just yelling at them to, like, get the play right. There's also a fine line of when to jump in and just, like, call them out for bonehead mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you've covered it multiple times, you definitely have an opportunity to hold them accountable for it. Like, plays of the play, if there's a runner on second and third, pitch goes behind the catcher, obviously pitcher's crashing. Like, I'm on my first baseman to crash to the shallow pitcher mound for an overthrow so that second runner doesn't score. It's like things like that we've pointed out multiple times. If somebody makes a bonehead mistake and my first base isn't backing up plays of the plate, you know, I'm going to get on their butt, you know?
Yep.
But if it's just simple, like, relays, cutoffs, things like that, like, there's an opportunity to, you know, just remind them. But also, like, they'll figure it out. They'll figure it out at some point. If they just don't know, that's a coachable moment. But if they should know, like, they'll figure it out. At the end of the day, they will figure it out.
And more often than not, if there is something that happens in the game where I feel like that's not something we've gone over, or even if it happens, like, a couple times, what it tells me is that we need to do a better job at practice as coaches.
Yeah.
Rather than blaming the kids for not knowing what to do in that situation, I try and turn it back on myself and say, okay, obviously they weren't prepared for that situation the way that they could have or should have been.
Yeah.
So what can we do in our next set of practices to make sure that we are prepared for those things?
Yeah.
It was at one point in this season, it was rundowns for my older boys. And it was just like, I know we've gone over this, but they weren't fully prepared for it. And so then we addressed it in practice, and I realized like they'd forgotten
what
we had worked on in the fall, and so we had to start back over. Now they picked it up pretty quickly, and it only took a couple of practices. We got it addressed, and then we haven't had any issues since.
Yeah.
With my 8U guys, like they'd never ever been caught in a rundown, and so we had to start from absolute scratch of, you know, how do you hold the ball,
how do you
squeeze the runner, you know, all of those things, so that when it comes up in a game, they're prepared for
it.
The other one for my younger guys too, it's been a hard concept to learn, is watching fly balls and not just running, you know?
Yeah.
Not just taking off when the ball's
like as a base runner?
Right.
Yeah.
As we play better and better teams,
contact does not mean go.
Fly balls to the outfield don't necessarily mean that it's going over the outfielder's head. They could get caught, and we could get doubled off.
Yes.
And so that's been a hard lesson to learn as well.
Yeah.
And knowing, like, how far to get off the base when you're seeing that ball fly up. Because if you're on first and it's tight bases, right, there's no stealing in league play. So if that ball is hit and it's kind of in between infield and outfield, and it's iffy whether or not they're going to catch it or not, if they don't catch it, we're screwed. If they do catch it, we're screwed.
It's a lose-lose situation.
It's a lose-lose situation. But, you know, trying to teach them how to get further off the base, or instead of just taking
reading,
off. Reading the fly ball.
Yes.
You know, it takes reps. It really does. It takes looking at it and seeing it. And if we see more than one player making the same mistake, that's on the coach.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
We should see that as being a coaching, not a player issue. Yeah.
But there is definitely a line where it's like, if you've been hammering it over and over and over, and then suddenly if there's like that lapse where it's like, what in the world? Like the past 3 weeks, and like my assistant coaches, Nick and Reed, could probably attest to this too. Like our past practices have looked the exact same every single time because we've been hammering nothing but double cuts, double relays, throw into cutoffs, bunt coverages. Really, those have been the biggest things, is double cuts, double relays, because now we're on big boy fields. Like if someone doesn't know what's going on, like shame on them, you know, shame on them. I'm going to tear them apart for that.
And we've had those issues too of like, a player being told this is what you do in that situation, and that exact situation happens the next play and they make the same mistake. And you know, that's frustrating. And that's when coaches are going to get upset.
Like,
if we know that you know what you should have done and you still don't do it. That's on the player.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I do think going back to the confidence piece too, is like when they do something really well, it's like, man, I love just jumping off my bucket in joy, screaming the attaboy, sure everyone knows that they just did everything exceptionally well.
Yep.
Like the best feeling in the world is like a shot, like runner on first, shot to the left center, and we hose them at third base. You know, nothing better than someone, like a relay that works really well, something that you've been working hard on. Or pitchers covering first base on a soft ground ball to the right side. Like, that's another thing we've been focusing a lot on. Like, if we do things right that we've been working on, it's like, throw your hands up for joy, scream, hoot and holler, make sure everyone knows that we just did something exceptionally well.
Yep.
It's fantastic. I love that feeling.
There was with my younger guys, we've been working on fly balls just every practice.
Yeah.
because, you know, the teams we're playing are hitting the ball harder and higher and that kind of thing. And
fly balls can be scary sometimes.
And for us to be competitive, like, we've got to catch them. Yeah. We've got to.
Yeah.
You know, as they get older, those will be cans of corn and be easy outs. But as of right now, it's still a little bit of a struggle for us.
Yeah.
And so we've been working on it literally every practice. And just a couple weeks ago, one of our outfielders made a catch in left field on a long fly ball. And I lost my mind. I jumped up and down. I just about ran onto the field because it was a good catch, you know. And I was really proud of him because we'd been working hard on it. And,
yeah.
It may not seem like a big deal to catch a fly ball.
But it is.
But it is.
Yeah. And no, I don't care who you are. Like, there's some fly balls, man. Like, I don't care if you're 8U, 12U, or 18U. Like, there's some fly balls that's like, oh, my gosh, I hope he catches it. And, when they pull it off, you're like, holy smokes.
Yeah.
Like, that was awesome. That was awesome.
We're getting to the point now. I've been doing this triangle fly ball drill where the two triangles, I set up a cone. I set up three cones. I set up three cones in the shape of a triangle in the outfield. Mm-hmm. So it's a big, big space. So basically I'll have like one in left field one in shallow left, one in really shallow center, and then one in deep left center, right? So it forms a triangle. Mm-hmm. And at cone number one in shallow left, you're running towards the cone in center and you're catching a fly ball over your shoulder. And then the second cone is, you're running towards the cone in center and you're catching a fly ball over the other shoulder.
Gotcha.
And then the one in center, you're catching a fly ball on the run, that's hit right at you.
Yeah.
So learning to read those balls that are over our heads and the ones
that are coming kind of shallow or short of us
that are maybe really high.
Yeah.
And I mean, seriously, we've been working on it every single practice.
Yeah.
And we have almost caught some on the run in games that's
awesome.
It's an impressive catch for an 8-year old to make. And if there's things like that you see your team consistently not doing, you need to figure out a way to work it into regular practice.
I think practice is a huge part in like building confidence. I like just a lot of basic drills, the way that you can instill a lot of confidence. Cause I mean, we want our players to be routine players, meaning like if a ground ball's hit to them, they should make that play 9 out of 10 times. Obviously sometimes you'll boot a ball, but like at least 9, 9.5 times out of 10, they should be really working on that. I think practice is a fantastic place to boost confidence, let them have those small wins or even big wins with big plays. But in games, like, sometimes just let them play, let them dictate, let them figure it out.
Let them fail. Yeah.
Like, I've been really focusing on with my kids is, like, when the play happens, is not yelling what base to throw, kind of like what you alluded to. I want my catcher being the general on the field. Like, if there's a fly ball in the gap, like, I'm usually yelling at my catchers. I'm like, Jackson or Jack, whoever, like, where's the play?
Yeah.
Like, during the game, like, during the play, I'm like, where's it going? Where's it going? And, like, reminding him, like, all right.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's moments where, like, you have to jump in. still have to jump in.
That's why we play 12 outs a lot with both my teams.
Yeah.
And we do it with live runners. So it's 12 outs for us because we're still younger. It's 27 outs for older kids, right?
Wrap up practice with that.
You're trying to get through as many innings as you can. And if you make an error, you go back and start that inning over again, right? And every single time, no matter where the runner is, I say, you got to call it out. Where's the play?
Yeah.
How many outs are there? Where's the infield going? Where's the outfield going?
Yeah.
What's the bunt coverage?
Yeah.
And you got to do it every single time.
Yeah.
So it gets them in that habit. My younger boys have definitely come a long way, in knowing, the game of baseball because of that. So, you know, if you're one of these coaches that goes to practice and it's, you know, one coach pitching to one player and they get 10 pitches and you might hit three of them they're running on the last one, and like that's the whole practice, you know, you're dumb. I hate to say it, but you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to come with some more intentionality than
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So one of the other things that I've been working on with my older team is our approach at the plate, and decision making on pitch selection.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's one of the hardest things to teach how to not swing at bad pitches and how to swing at good pitches. It takes intentional effort in the batting cages week in and week out, and you got to do it, I think, with regularity. Like it should be almost every week that we're working on pitch selection. So one of the things we talk about on my team is, you know, before two strikes, our approach is we want it to be middle. If it's not middle, we're not swinging.
Yes.
But at the same time, as a coach, when I'm in the game, I don't want to tell them, don't swing at a bad pitch, because now all they're thinking about is I'm looking for a bad pitch, and all I heard was swing. So they're going to do the exact opposite of what you tell them not to do.
It's the truth.
So what I've been trying to tell them is look for a good pitch. You know, look for that middle pitch, right? Do you encounter that?
I do. Yes, I do encounter that. I do agree with that. I've even heard some high level coaches or psychologists talk about, like, even when they get in the batter's box, like, don't even say their name, because they all just like diverts their whole attention span. You know, like if you're like, hey, come on at him, like right when you're in the box, it's like, oh crap, someone said my name, you know, like,
right.
But like, right. Like batters have to be so focused on hitting. Cause I don't even know what the status for youth players, but like major league level, like it's a fraction of a second that you have to decide whether you're swinging or not swing.
Right.
And that's not even swinging the bat, you know, like if that makes sense, like a fraction of a second to decide. And then your swing has to be after that.
Yep.
That's to even just hit, like even get on contact.
Yep.
So even youth, I mean, it's probably similar timing. You have a fraction of a second to make a decision of if you're hitting it or not. Yep. So like, yeah, I would say you have to train it, not even just weekly. You have to train that almost daily, you know, be in the cage. Even just batting practice or underhand front toss, like work on selection, work on pitch selection.
And start it with a count, and, you know, start with a 2-0 count and say you're looking for middle. If it's not that, you're not
take
swinging.
It, yeah. Take it.
Learn to take that pitch. As tempting as that high fastball might be, when we're ahead in the count, it needs to be the pitch that we want to hit.
The high fastball is like a hot girl, you know? Like, it looks good, but it's trouble. It looks good, but it's trouble.
Right.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there. The high fastball, man, just leave it. It's not, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah.
It's going to be trouble. Look for a fastball down the middle. Look for a pitch that you, like, we've been really focusing on, like, hit first pitch fastballs. Like, just stay on it, because, I mean, I've just noticed that, like, we take so many first-pitch fastballs. It's like, why? Right. If you see the percentages, like, you could do a quick Google search, and you could see, like, based on batting averages, like, once you get one strike, your batting average drops a little bit. Once you get to two strikes, oh, my gosh, your batting average sinks from, like, 300 to 100 success rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, don't waste a strike. Jump on that first pitch. Jump on a good pitch. I mean, if they throw you a curveball that's just like a great first pitch curveball, cool. Take it and just tip your hat, you know?
Yeah.
Hunt a fastball.
Or foul it off, or, you know, do something.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. The other thing that I tell them too is once we get to two strikes, you know, like every coach, now it's protect the plate.
Yes.
Understand that the strike zone is bigger. And so what I do is I'll set up my cages. So one cage will be all working on that middle pitch. And what we'll do there is mix pitch types. So it's a 2-0 count or a 2-1 count or whatever it is. And we're just working fastballs, changeups. And you're looking for your pitch to hit and you're trying to crush it up the middle. And then we'll have another cage that's two strikes. And you're just trying to either foul it off or get a hit.
Yeah.
The other one that I'm trying to teach my 10U boys right now is the hit and run. We've been learning to slap a little bit because I think barrel control helps your overall hitting anyways. Yeah. If you can learn to go the other way with it and put it on the ground. We haven't been able to execute it in a game yet, but I mean, we've literally been working on it all season.
Yeah.
It's going to come.
Same. Hit and run the bunts. Those have been it.
It's especially when you're playing a really good catcher or a really good hard throwing pitcher, being able to slap that ball on the ground the other way with a runner on is huge.
Yeah.
So we're still working on that. But like I said, you've got to work it into your practice plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So like so going back to confidence, talking about like helping out players with confidence, how do you help players handle like failure? Because the game's all about failure.
Yeah.
I mean, they say if you get 3 hits out of 10, like you're a fantastic player, but like, just be real, you're getting out 7 times. That sucks. Like, that is so hard, so difficult, especially for young athletes, especially for good young athletes, like where they're used to being good at everything, and then suddenly I get out. Like, how do you help out with, like, failure?
It's a little cliche, but we talk about thinking like goldfish on my team.
Yes.
You got to have that short-term memory. Yes. Think like Dory. You're allowed to be mad for 3 seconds or 5 seconds or whatever it is, and then you have to let it go. Because one of the things we've noticed on our team, too, is that bad attitude is it's like water dripping on the counter. It goes everywhere.
Yeah.
And it can get in and through the rest of the team really quick.
Yeah.
And so if we have a bad or negative attitude about what just happened, that bleeds onto your other players. Whereas if we can have a positive attitude, come back to the dugout with, here's what I'm seeing. They're calling the outside corner. His fastball looks sneaky, or beware, he's going to throw a changeup in multiple different counts. Just be ready for it. Whatever it is, if you can come back with information rather than a bad attitude and take a positive approach, that's what we're trying to teach and ingrain in our boys right now. Yeah. It's not an easy thing to do, though, because I understand. Striking out sucks.
Yeah, striking out sucks. Booting a ball on the field, it's terrible. It's so frustrating because you feel like you let the team down, you let yourself down, you let mom and dad down. But at the end of the day, failure is just a part of the game. And I know it's cliche. Everyone says a failure, you're going to fail, all that stuff. But it's okay because it gives you an opportunity to win the next at bat, to win. If you just struck out, you give an opportunity to win your next play that you go on defense.
Yep.
I tell people that you have 3 seconds to mope around. You have 3 seconds to be mad, to be distraught, to be frustrated. Do not throw equipment, but you have 3 seconds to yell at yourself inside, right? Internally, you can scream at yourself for 3 seconds. Then once you're done with that, breathe. Now go be a good teammate.
One strategy I've heard is have some object in your bag or some thing on the field external to you that you can either grab or squeeze or hold or look at to act like a reset button.
Yeah.
To be able to have that thing, to see that thing, to externally say, okay, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
I'm focusing on this thing. I'm looking at that patch of grass out in the outfield, or I'm looking at the tree out there in left center.
Focal point,
Some sort of external focal point to take 5 deep breaths and then move on.
Yeah, I've heard them talk about the Yankees. One thing that the Yankees hitting coach has worked with them on it is whenever they have a bad swing during an at-bat, is the batters will actually step out, they'll grab a handful of dirt, they'll squeeze as hard as they can, they'll look down the line. So if you're righty, you'll look at the right field foul pole, you'll stare at it, you'll squeeze the dirt as hard as you can, you'll take a big breath, and as you exhale, you release the dirt. And it's like a way that they'll be able to focus. They'll find a focal point, which that's like kind of calms your nerves. But then releasing that dirt is a way of them just like exhaling and releasing that frustration. So like if they swing through a curveball that they should have hit 500 feet, is there a way to reset? That's them being like, hey, I release that. I'm done with that swing. I'm done with whatever. It's a great opportunity. I try to tell like hitters to do that, but like that should be real. Not everyone, when they're up to bat, like it's hard to instill that routine. But like
the something Yankees that have you done can that. Work on in practice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, look at something, find a focal point, squeeze something. Yeah, I love that squeeze. You know, whether it's a handful of dirt, you know, whatever it is, your batting glove
could be a stress ball. Could be a. It could be a cross necklace. It could be something that has some meaning to you that you can take and spend a moment of mindfulness on that to hit that mental reset button.
Yeah, for sure. Resetting is a huge thing. But like failure is a part of the game, and like one thing to kind of overcome that and help, you know, like helping players work through all that is don't focus on like what could have happened, you know, like you strike out, you can't control that, but control like your attitude, control your hustle, your effort, because at the end of the day, like that's what it's about, you know, like that's what it's about, is being a good teammate, hustling, making sure that you can control all of it. One big thing that you can control is your emotions. Nothing worse than someone striking out, coming to the dugout, throwing every piece of equipment they own. Like, there's nothing worse than that. Gosh.
Yeah. It destroys the whole team psyche.
It destroys that, but also just shows that player is just like very, I mean, yeah, they're unstable because they're emotional because they just struck out. But like, it just kind of shows that, like, I don't know if this kid's, you know, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's. That's a hard,
I am an emotional person myself too, so like I get what those kids are going through. Like I have empathy for them because there are definitely times when I want to kick something.
Kick something. I want to cry. I want to do whatever. Yeah, you know, like,
and I've done it. I've kicked the ball bucket. And as a coach, like I've had to learn that I just can't do that. I can't.
Especially as a youth. Yeah.
I have to set the example, and oh my gosh, it's hard. It's
you
hard
can't
sometimes.
Take a bat to a cooler. Yes, you cannot.
Right.
Oh man.
There are times when the strategy I've got right now is to put my hands on my head and walk down the foul line into the outfield, take 3 deep breaths, and then walk back and it's gone.
You've
got to have let it go by then.
Yes. I found like we play on field turf a lot, so sunflower seeds aren't allowed, but like I have to have gum. You know, like it's just like my thing. Like I squeeze down on that gum, I just clench my jaw, then it's just like that's my way of like, okay, it's fine. I don't want anybody to see that I'm frustrated, you know, like it's just like it's part of the game. It's okay, like it's okay. The world's going to continue.
Yeah. One of the strategies I came into this season with that I haven't really executed on, I started to, but was to have a little notepad, just like a little pocket-sized notepad to write down things that I saw during the game so that I can remember that those are things that I want to work on. But it also forces me to sit down and be quiet and have an outlet for my frustrations rather than, you know, emotionally reacting.
Write down your frustrations. I hate everything. I'm just kidding.
We missed the, you know, first inning. We missed, you know, the such and such play.
Yes.
You know, or so-and-so made a great play. You know, taking positive notes as well, I think, can help as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So now, like, talking through, you know, all that stuff, so talking about coaching confidence and all that, like, a lot of confidence is just, like, knowing how the game works, you know? Like, so, like, when it comes to, like, teaching baseball IQ, I mean, I think that's a huge part of confidence because nothing worse than, like, seeing a player that has no idea what's going on, the situation, the ball gets hit to them. They don't know what's going on. Now their whole team's yelling at them because, you know, they missed the play. They didn't know where it was going. The coaches are mad. I think that's one way that just, like, confidence goes out the windows when they're not prepared for it mentally.
Yeah.
Baseball IQ, I mean, I think baseball IQ like, I would much rather take a player that has high baseball IQ and average, average skill,
athleticism.
Yeah, than someone that's highly athletic, has no feel for the game. You know, like, I don't know. It's kind of like that quarterback mindset. I'd much rather have someone that understands the game deeply than someone that's highly athletic and has no feel for the game. Right. I mean, how do you teach baseball IQ?
I do think, you know, we spent several sessions in front of the whiteboard that we have here in the facility early on in the season to go over situations, to go over bunt coverages, to go over relays, and talk through you know, what to do and what each player's job is. And I would have the boys take turns graphing out, like, okay, here's the field, here's where all the players are, here's where the ball is hit, where does everybody go? And they would, you know, draw lines to who goes to what base, who goes to which cover, you know, and all of that. And we cycled through a few different situations like that. That's one way to do it if you can't get out on a field. I do think there is something to being on the field, that having them actually physically run through those situations with their bodies that you can't replicate on a whiteboard. But I do think the whiteboard can be helpful. I think doing pop quizzes, you know, you could do it as written quizzes.
Yeah.
You could do it as, we did a little game show, during one, practice at the end of practice. We just divided up into two teams.
Yeah.
And I held out, I can't even remember what it was, in my hand, and whoever grabbed it first from that team got to answer the question.
That's funny.
Or whatever. And, so we would just cycle through different situations of, like, you're the catcher and here's where the ball goes. What's your job? And,
yeah.
Or here's the count. What are you looking for as a hitter? What are you calling as a pitcher? What are you, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah.
Here's this sign. What does this sign mean?
That's awesome.
You know, all of those kinds of things. And just kind of did a little quiz game show.
Yeah. We've gone in depth as far as, like, man, it takes some time to set it up, but, like, actual Jeopardy, we'll do like, whatever, run 100 for 100 points, well, 200 points, 300 points, 400 points. It'll be like the level of difficulty where it's like 100 points, like no runners on, fly ball to left center, where's everyone go? You know, and you
got 100,
and
then it's
like
great.
400's like really confusing where it's like runner on first and third, okay, chopper to shortstop, you know, in the hole where, you know, like, you know, kind of tricky. It's like, okay, well, where's the play at?
And the runner's already taken off.
Runner stealing or whatever. And it's like, okay, well, what's the play? You know, it's just funny. You guess creative as possible. I do like one thing that you said where you're talking about, like, the whiteboard, but also getting on the field. I think as a coach, like, understanding who your players are, because I do feel like as a coach, I have 11 kids on my team. It's like not all of them learn from whiteboards.
Right.
There's a lot of players that need me to get on the whiteboard and actually write it out so they can visualize it. I need some people that, like, that there's going to be some whiteboards where they're going to have to write on the whiteboard and they're going to actually have to scribe it out. But also on the field, it's like there's a lot of players that have to do it to get the feel for it.
I think that's a good point of, like,
so there's one, two,
there are
three
different
you have
kinds
to go.
Of learning. Yeah.
Yeah. There's tons. Like me, I feel like I've kind of got to the point where, like, I've learned by watching other people do things. But me growing up, like, I had to do it.
Yeah.
I had to, like, if you showed me how my swing should look, now I could probably figure it out. But as a kid, I need you to actually, like, show me, you know, like, actually put me in the spot. I need to feel what it feels like to get it right.
The other thing I've heard, like, specifically related to swings, is it's easy for me as a coach to diagnose what a kid is doing wrong. And a lot of coaches will tell a kid, oh, you're leaking out the backside, or you're dropping your hands, or you're not getting your foot down. But what I've heard is, like, unless you have a solution, a way to fix it, don't tell me what's wrong.
Because
that gets me in a negative mindset. I heard one major league player saying, you know, coaches told me for years that I worked from underneath the ball and I didn't know how to fix it. And like, major league coach after major league coach would tell him, hey, you know you work from underneath the ball. Great. Tell me how to fix it. If I can't fix it, then, respectfully, buzz off.
Yes, it's the truth,
so,
man.
Like, at least have a solution if you're going to if you're going to have notice a problem or whatever.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's a lot of people that just kind of shoot things out there like that. Just because as coaches, you have to have something to say. But I feel like just tell them something that if you don't have a solution, just say something good. You know, like,
right.
Dude, your hips are firing. You know, like, oh, my right. gosh. Could you imagine if you barreled that sucker up? Fantastic, you know, instead of like, oh, your bat's casting, but I don't know how to fix you.
So with that, I would also say there are two ways that I think I teach baseball IQ on my teams. The first is through our routines. Trying to work through as many, like our infield routine, right? Our infield routine addresses almost every situation you're going to be faced with in the infield over the course of a game, almost. At least all of the regular ones, right? So we're covering our around the horn drill is really what that drill is for, is throwing runners out that are running on you around the bases.
Yeah.
That's what I've learned has been the biggest improvement for us. So, you know, throwing around the horn and then getting one, just fielding a ground ball and going to first.
Yeah.
Then covering throwdowns, turning to first and third plays.
Yeah.
Do or die plays at the plate.
Yeah.
Bunts. Like we run through all of that in our infield routine. So making sure you have a good infield routine that all of the players know and can do it without thinking.
Yeah.
That I think is step one. The second one is to go completely the opposite direction and go with pure chaos. And you can either do this with the 12 outs drill or 27 outs drill. I just call it 12 outs because that was what we normally do. And putting runners on bases, if you don't have enough players to do that, just put a couple of outfielders out there, or don't play with a catcher or whatever you want to do, or don't play with a pitcher and just work on whatever situations you feel like you need to work on.
Yeah.
And put runners on the bases and tell those runners you get points for every base you take. If you get to first safely, that's 1 point. If you get from first to second, that's two. If you get all the way around, right?
Yeah, every best touch. Yeah.
And, you know, you're going to get an extra point for every base you take.
Yeah.
And if you're stuck at first and I hit them a double play ball and you didn't get to second, you know, then you don't get that point, right?
Yeah.
So it teaches them, even when they're safe at first, let's see if I can take another base.
Yeah.
Forces the team to get caught in a rundown, to try and get to the next bag and take another base. Especially if there's another runner on the bases already.
Yeah.
If you can try and be sneaky behind the lead runner and they throw behind you and now that lead runner is going, like it forces you to deal with live runners on the bases.
Yeah. The game can definitely speed up and become really reckless at moments. And if we can't shut it down, like it's a matter of even two runners, three runners scoring because the ball now gets thrown down the foul line and suddenly now, oh shoot, runner on first scored, you know, like,
yeah.
So yeah, chaos is, that's awesome.
What about you? What are some ways that you teach baseball IQ?
I mean, the whiteboard, definitely getting on a field, slowing things down a lot and like actually talking through things. Like there'll be times where like I'll pull everyone to the pitcher mound and then we'll disperse onto the field. We'll talk through the situation and then we'll go do it. Like yesterday's practice, we recapped because for some reason we do fantastic with relays to second base. We do fantastic like double cuts to third base or just regular relays to third base. But for some reason, like gap shots when the play's at home, now it's suddenly like, oh my gosh, that runner's going to score because it's a long throw. It's a long, like, let's say left center gap, the play's at home. You know, like yesterday we actually had to bring everyone in. We had to talk through it. And now went and set up, did it. came back, talk through the exact situation, go back to the field, knock it out, because I do feel like there is opportunities where you have to slow things down. One thing I really like is talking about the whys. Understanding, like, we could tell players what to do, but I love explaining why. Like, why is it important? Why should the right fielder be floating in towards, like, in between first and second when the fly ball or when the hit is to left field? You know, why is that important? Because overthrow second base, if that ball goes to the right field line, now that runner gets third base free. So explaining the whys. Or hit and runs, why do we want to hit on the ground to second base? You know, it's a fantastic way to, I think, to make sure that they understand that there's a reason behind doing it.
Yep.
Not just doing it.
Yep.
Because, that's what I love, just making sure that they know why it's important.
Right.
Baseball IQ is one thing that can definitely make or break players. If they have no feel for the game, man, it's tough. But if they can understand a little bit, like, no one's going to be an expert, especially at the youth age. But there's definitely opportunities where we can slow things down, but understanding why we have to do it right.
Yeah.
So
there was one situation a couple weekends ago. We had a runner at third, I think. Yeah, there was a runner at third. A ball was hit hard on the ground to third. It was hit softly on the ground to third. And the third baseman decided to make a play at the plate and try and get that lead runner out. And I'm like, you know what? I get it. We were ahead in the game at that point. There were no outs in the inning. So he wanted to try and get the lead runner. So I totally saw where his head was at.
Yeah.
And he made that decision. He threw it home. It was just a little bobbled on the fielding and just a little bit bobbled on the catch. And it was a close play, but he was safe. We weren't going to throw him out. Even if we fielded it perfectly and caught it perfectly, it was going to be really close. And so I went ahead, I pulled the infield in and I said, hey, look, here's the situation. We're ahead 6-3 or 6-4, whatever it was. We just need outs. Just get the out at first. Because now that run has scored, now we still have no outs.
Yeah.
And now there's a runner at first again, and he's going to steal first pitch. And so, you know, we're going to have a runner in scoring position really quick. I would have much rather had the outs. And I didn't blame him. I was like, you know what? You made a baseball decision in that moment. Yep. I'm not on the field. You were. Yeah. We almost got it, but not quite, you know.
Yes.
And so it was just a little bit of a reset of like, hey, let's just pay attention to what the situation is. And right now, let's just focus on getting outs. And then sure enough, we did. Yeah. We got three outs. They still managed to score a run or two.
Sure.
But we were the home team and we were fine. So
yeah.
We got out of the inning and won the game. But, you know, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, that's a tough call. I don't necessarily want to tell him to not do that. Like, I appreciate the instinct there of trying to get that lead runner and not allow the runner to score.
But, letting him do that and not succeed at the play definitely helps out with his baseball IQ. It now allows him to know what his boundary is or what he's capable of or the situation is. Because, like, if that play happens again, he probably will double. You know, he'll probably be like, okay, I'm not getting him at four.
Right.
I'm going to shoot him at one.
Or if we say, hey, look, it's a tie game or we're losing.
Sure.
We can't let that run
score.
Now that's the right situation.
The do or die sell out to the play.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. And it goes back to the whole, like, just let them play. Let them make the decisions. Because at the end of the day, your player made a decision. He went with it from the get-go. He didn't doubt himself.
Yeah.
Like, he had confidence in it, but was the right decision.
I wasn't mad about it.
That's okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I wasn't mad about it. I was just oh, okay. That was an interesting choice.
Hey, at the end of the day, like, we want our players to make decisions and just, like, go for it. We want them to be gamers because there's some plays, like, I'll admit, there's some plays that happen where I'll call out a bag Like runner on first base, and our shortstop does a big backhand play towards third base, and I'm yelling 1-1-1, and he turns his hips and nails the runner at second. It's like, oh, okay, he had a good feel. He had a good internal clock. It's just one of those things. Like they will soon understand what their limit is and what they can achieve on that certain play.
Right.
At the end of the day, like, be decisive. Let the players play. Unless it's just a complete mental lapse.
Yeah.
Like, just let them play and then let them learn.
I think our job as coaches in this regard is to coach decision making rather than mechanics.
Like, yeah.
We got to do the mechanics.
Yeah.
We want to have good baseball fundamentals and skills, but if you're only coaching mechanics, you're missing 90% of the game.
Yes.
Because 90% of the game is mental.
Yeah.
Is that mental side of the game. And so you put them in different situations in practice to force them to make decisions, whether that's at the plate with different counts or out in the field with you know, runners. Make it live, make it game speed.
Yeah.
You know, doing stuff not at game speed. Maybe just to get the mechanics down so that we can't, like what you were talking about with the relays to home or whatever. Like, we do that to where it becomes second nature, and then once it's second nature, now we got to do it at game speed and force them to make decisions. I think that's what our job is.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about that. There is a time and place for mechanics. You know, there's a time and place for mechanics. But at the end of the day, like, we want them to run game speed, do things game speed, but also just foster that baseball IQ.
I mean, and have fun. At the end of the day, it's about having fun.
I do think there's a moment where everyone forgets about that. You know, forgets that baseball is fun. It's right. Supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be fun, man. There's some moments. Gosh, it's so funny. I think it was last weekend. We actually, if I was an outsider, I would just, like, shake my head. But I think me and my assistant coach, we got onto our team. We yelled at them because they weren't having fun. And it's just, like, it's so funny. It's funny to think because, like being so heated because everyone's silent. No one's enjoying it. Like, yelling at the team to have fun. Just, it's so funny. But it's true. You get so frustrated because, like, why are we not having fun with our friends?
Right.
And it got to the point where, like, we were just so frustrated. It's like, why is no one applauding our pitcher that just struck out three in a row? You know, like, yell, hoot and holler, have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, screaming at them, have fun, come on.
One of my assistant coaches does a great job of telling the team, get off the bench, like, go put your faces on the fence, yell for your teammates.
Oh,
yeah,
it's so
let
funny.
Them know they're doing a good job.
It's so funny yelling at your team to have fun.
To have fun.
Because it seems so counterintuitive. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. I took one of your suggestions, and I've been doing bunt scrimmages
at
the end of practices.
It's fun.
They have a lot of fun with that. You want to talk about having fun? It also teaches situational stuff to you.
Yeah,
for
sure.
Really
good
for that.
I have now started to reel it in to where, like, my infielders have to play somewhat a real infield role.
Yep.
Because when we first started, it was like, okay, as long as we have two fielders on the left side of the pitcher, two fielders on the right side of the pitcher, like, we're fine. But then we had people that were playing, like, 4 feet in front of home plate.
Yep.
You know, like, so it's like, now, like, my rule is you have to be behind the pitcher. You can't be ahead of the pitcher, like, be behind the pitcher. But I don't know. Do you have them playing normal depth, or what do you do?
Yeah, we've done the last couple times we've done it in the cages, and it's been a little difficult because the proportions aren't quite the same.
Sure. But hey, good job done.
But so the last time we did it, we had an oblong field, so it was a rectangle instead of a square.
Yeah.
And so we had three defenders on the third base side and one first baseman.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, hitters, look at where they're setting up and hit it to where they're not.
It's the truth, man.
And so they started putting a little extra on it and hitting it over to my left side as the pitcher.
A full push button,
like a full, like, harder push button instead of one of the soft, like, third base line ones. And they started getting on base because of, and then
oh
the defense
gosh.
Had to adjust.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Bunt scrimmages are a fun way. Like, it's a good way to kill, especially, like, to kill 10 minutes, you know, at the end of practice. It's just, like, a fun way to end practice.
Yeah.
Let them compete. We actually did that at the end of last night. We had like 10 minutes left in practice. Like, okay, cool. Let's do bunt scrimmage.
So you can
we
get brought a lot the bases. Done in 10 minutes.
Yeah. We brought the bases in to 70 feet. And we just played, yeah. Because I try to shorten the bases too for my team. So, like, it's more bang bang stuff. Right. But, yeah. I mean, we didn't have a winner, sadly. But it was 0-0 ball game. But, I mean, hey, playing defense.
Yeah. I think when we played, it was 2-1 or 3-1 or 3-2.
It's usually when there's, like, an error. That's usually what happens. It's not necessarily a perfect bunt. It's just, like, when someone makes a bad throw.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
All right. Hey, man, we covered a lot today.
Yeah. I think it's good stuff. Coaches, keep coaching your players up in confidence. Like, let them fail, but then coach them up through that failure. Let them at the end of the day, let them play. Let them have fun. even if you have to yell at them to have fun. Oh, man.
That's right. Yeah. All right, man. Well, we will see you on the flippity flop.
Yep. See you next episode.